I saw that.
Oh, I'd like a copy of that.
Oh, you didn't see it?
Oh, I don't.
When was it?
Oh, a couple of week ago.
No, it's longer than that. It was before.
Okay.
I should have kept it for you.
Yeah. Are we ready?
Okay. Do I have to hit it?
Okay. We'll go live. We'll start as soon as the secretary gives me the thumbs up.
Yeah.
Thumbs up it is. Okay. Good morning. I'll call this meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission to order and ask that we all please stand for a flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And as our first order of business, as anyone who was watching the last meeting knows, the Chair, Doreen Liberto Blank, resigned from the Planning Commission. So I was the Vice Chair, and by our bylaws, that pushes me to the Chairman's position, leaving vacant the Vice Chair position, and we should elect one.
Mr. Chairman, I would offer a motion for our Vice Chair to be our District 4's representative, Jean Melskow.
All right, and I'll second that motion. Are there any other nominations? I'll close the nominations then. All those in favor of making Jean their vice chair, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. Jean, it's unanimous.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, put your little mic on there, Ronnie.
Oh, it has to be off? Oh, I'm sorry.
Now you're on.
Okay. Thank you for the confidence in me, and I'll do the best job I can.
All right. Moving on, our next item is a public comment, this being the opportunity for anybody from the public to comment on anything that's not on today's agenda. Speaking of the agendas, there are copies in that little wooden box in the back of the room. There are also speaker slips, if you'd be so kind as to fill them out. If you'd like to speak on anything on today's agenda, you would help us all by being able to spell your name for the record correctly, and we'll put them in the order that we receive them so you could speak. Other particulars, we have copies of today's staff agenda over. Warren, could you kind of point to where that's? So if people would like to know when we start talking about page 2-43, some obscure comment, you could run over there and get that and see what we're talking about. We'll try to be a little less obtuse about it. But okay. So the only speaker I have for public comment is L.J. Hansen. And we have a timer here, which you are given 3 minutes to speak, and we start the timer, and it's green for 2 minutes, and then when it starts yellow, you got 1 minute left, and when it's red, the hook comes out.
Okay, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is L.J. Hansen, and I have two missions here. First, I would like to read an excerpt from a letter the NCAC sent to the Planning Department. When did clustering become the rule rather than the exception? Calendar Garrett and the community in general have witnessed how this clustering is not working. We have lots of open space, weed patches.
Anyone else for public comment? Seeing none, I'll close it. Moving on to planning staff updates. And Warren, did you have any comments on how clustering fits into our pattern?
Actually, I'll defer to Pat Beck to bring up some staff update items and then let her answer that question.
Okay.
Actually, Pat Beck, County Planning. Warren and I are going to kind of tag team on a couple of items today. Warren's going to touch base with you on the issue of review of your bylaws and procedures that came out of the closing comments from Doreen and a suggestion that we revisit that, and also a request that your commission consider the issue of telecommuting. Warren will be talking about that. We are also looking in the future at the idea of doing a planning commission retreat in which you can, in a less formal environment, talk about your goals for the year. We can talk about budget opportunities or constraints, and maybe some of the study session items that keep getting pushed to the end of the day, and we don't really get sufficient time to work on them. And wanted to get some feedback from you on whether you thought that was something that you would like us to pursue. The final item is really concerning your last item on the agenda. And at that time, we want to talk with your commission about how long of a day you would like for your continued meeting to work on the North Coast Area Plan. We've had some comments about not giving you too long of a day, since you also have a full agenda on the next day. So when that item is in this afternoon, wanted to get you thinking about how long of a day. We had suggested from 1:30 until 9 with a dinner break. Do we want to start a little later because you've got a whole day the next day? So we're going to be looking for your ideas about that as we bring up that item. Warren is going to touch base with you on the issue of...
He's kind of busy, so don't be dodging that cluster.
Okay.
Don't be dodging that cluster bullet.
Unexpectedly come up and ask me a question.
That's good. I'm glad you're there for that.
So I'll just dive right in. As part of today's hearing, we had a request from Commissioner Christie that we look at the issue of commissioners who may wish to telecommuting, I guess, teleconferencing, so that they could participate in the actual review of agenda items from a remote location. We discussed this matter with County Council, and I think at this point Warren can dive into what that process would be and how we could make a provision for it if the Commission was interested.
Thank you, Pat. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. We had an inquiry recently about the possibility of whether a planning commissioner could participate in a meeting at a remote location. And that triggered some... That seems like a simple question, but like so many things to do with planning and government, it wasn't really a simple answer. We had to do some research in the government code. And teleconferencing is allowed both either for members of a body to participate at a remote location or for the public to participate. But it's governed by not only the Brown Act, but also some provisions of the government code under Section 54, 54953. And the first step is that the Planning Commission has to deliberately elect to allow teleconferencing. And that's not something that's currently covered in your bylaws or your rules of procedure. So that would be the first step, is that the Planning Commission would have to deliberately make a choice to elect to facilitate teleconferencing. Then if the Planning Commission does hold a teleconference meeting, the hearing notices, and these would include the individual project notices as well as the agenda itself, would have to reflect the teleconference site, and the public would have to have access to that site. And there would have to be the teleconference site would have to be posted at least 72 hours in advance that it would be the site of the teleconference meeting. So there's a lot of procedure involved. And in terms of the immediate inquiry, there was no way to possibly set it up for the meeting that was requested for, because the notices had gone out quite a bit in advance, just that we schedule some time, if you're interested, to discuss this. And it would be appropriate to do it at the same time you review your bylaws, because it really needs to be acknowledged as part of the bylaws.
Now, Mr. Ovid, when he was in the hospital for an extended period, he did that, right?
Yes, he did.
So that was one example of perhaps.
That was done in a public place. It was Templeton Community Hospital. I believe it was in a conference room. It was posted. People could attend and observe him while he participated in the board meeting. And, in fact, did, I understand.
Either you have any opinions?
Yeah, I agree with the suggestion that we maybe ought to look at this when we look at the bylaws. I think that would be appropriate time.
I would concur with Gene.
And speaking of the bylaws, I was wondering maybe we should, I know we can't do it on today's agenda, but thinking about appointing an ad hoc committee of a couple of commissioners to work with county council and planning staff, and perhaps they could come up with something and then for the entire commission, and then that would be part and parcel of that. Would that seem to work for you?
Yeah, that would work.
Ms. Rappa?
Definitely. Since we aren't taking action on the item today, can we give direction? Or
I think there's been sufficient direction to staff to bring it back when they bring the bylaws back. Do you know how long it'll be, Warren, before those bylaws are up for review again?
If you're asking me if there's an established interval, I'm not aware of that. But in terms of
I wasn't aware of the available agenda. Yeah, I wasn't aware that it was up for review. Maybe a couple of meetings away, something like that.
At least.
Yeah.
The agendas are full up until the meeting of October 13th.
Right.
Well, I was just thinking of perhaps at our next meeting we could take an action to appoint two commissioners to work with you guys and to come up with something however long it takes.
And my question related to the, I think that's an excellent idea, and the appointment, does it have to wait till the next meeting? Does it have to be noticed, was really my question.
I think that it should be listed on the agenda, so
it
could be listed as a separate agenda item and then delegated.
And actually we could put a short discussion on the agenda without waiting until October.
Let's do that then.
We certainly can do that. I just need to tell you that we've already sent the agenda for August 11th out to the copy center. So,
I have got it already. We can do it the following one then.
Okay. Is that sure. Acceptable? Because otherwise there's a lot of process we have to go through to
process costs money.
Revised. Okay. So we'll bring it back then on the 25th.
Fine.
Okay. To appoint a subcommittee.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman, I wondered if staff had any comments on L.J. Hansen's concerns for District 4.
I wasn't going to let him get away without answering that. You know?
I was not familiar with the letter from NCAC. It's something we'll take back and discuss. I heard that they're asking us to review whether clusters are the right decision in their kind of environment where it may just end up being an open area with no active maintenance. And I also heard a concern about balancing high density as a way to avoid sprawl. I'd like to review the full letter, and perhaps that's something we can include in the staff updates at the next meeting.
Right, and I know the Templeton Area Advisory Group has also had some concerns about clustering. And I've always heard it used as one tool in a toolbox, but maybe there's a perception that it's being overused.
I think I would say that in most instances it's the choice of the developer to do it by a standard split versus cluster. There are some areas where there are planning area standards that a decision has been made through the general plan that the right way to develop that individual property or that area is through cluster, and if those were to be revisited, we would be actually doing an ordinance amendment to delete that in those particular areas.
I'm wondering if it's done in the staff update, that wouldn't be on, NCAC wouldn't know when it's coming up because you wouldn't show it in the agenda, would you? I mean,
Do you have a preference that we agendize this for a discussion? Specifically to discuss the response to the letter?
I'll leave that up to staff. I mean, I think they should know or at least get a letter from you when what.
We can advise them when we would be prepared and let them know so that they could be here during the staff updates.
Okay, I think that would work. Thank you.
Anything else for staff updates?
As an affirmative vote, is that correct?
Well, a majority of a quorum can pass the item, so you've got a quorum of three and two votes will pass it.
Great.
Mr. Chairman, may I make a comment?
Certainly.
Commissioner Rapa, item A is a new item. It's a time extension, so you don't need to abstain from that.
I realize I was just trying to kind of do the consent quickly.
All right.
Okay. So let's just talk about item A, track 2538. Any comments, motions?
I'll go ahead and move the consent item A, consent agenda.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, say no. It's unanimous. Now, moving on to the minutes.
I'll go ahead and move approval of the minutes. B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, and N.
And I'll second that. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? So it's unanimous with one extension. Abstention. Okay, first hearing item. Madam Secretary, could we introduce that, please?
Hearing to consider a request by Union Asphalt for a conditional use permit to allow the creation of a potential building pad by filling a former sand and gravel mine. The site is in the Salinas River Planning Area, County File Number DRC 2004-00156, Supervisorial District 1, Keith Miller, Project Manager.
Thank you, Commissioners. Keith Miller, County Planning. I'm going to wait a second until you can see the project. There it is. Okay, the proposed project is located on the eastern end of Volpe Isabel, just west of the railroad tracks, on the north end of the community of Templeton. The site is zoned industrial, and it is bordered on the west and south by more industrial properties, and on the east and north by agriculture. The site is abandoned sand and gravel mine. The applicant is proposing to reclaim the mine by filling the excavated portions with a combination of decomposed granite and recycled concrete and asphalt. The project will require approximately 89,000 cubic yards of fill. The majority of this material is expected to be decomposed granite and come from the Rocky Canyon Quarry outside the city of Atascadero. The fill will be compacted to engineering specifications in expectation that eventually the site will be used for industrial purposes. Once grading is completed, the site will be reseeded with native grasses. This site plan shows the final elevations of the pad. The overall elevation will be raised to meet the existing contours on the western edge of the parcel. The majority of the fill will be needed on this northern edge of the parcel. This is a view looking west from the northeastern corner of the parcel. This is the northern edge of the parcel here. This is a view looking to the southwest. You can see that various debris has been accumulating over the past 20 or 30 years since the pit has been abandoned. Here's another site view, railroad tracks on the eastern side of the parcel. This is the existing Union Asphalt concrete batch plant. This is the asphalt batch plant. This site here is also an approved site for recycling concrete and asphalt. It's expected that that's where most of that material will be generated. Staff is requesting that we add one additional condition to this project. There's a guideline from the Templeton Community Design Plan that requires detention basins be designed to lessen their visual impact. So staff is requesting that a condition number 9 be added, and it should read, prior to issuance of a grading permit, the proposed detention basin will be redesigned to appear more natural, avoiding rectilinear forms. It's currently, the detention basin is currently this triangle shape in the corner of the parcel. And that concludes staff's presentation. We're recommending you adopt the negative declaration and approve the conditional use permit.
Questions of staff? I had one on page 120 of the mitigated negative declaration, and this is under the transportation. We said there's no, everything is insignificant. And under your comments, mitigation conclusion, trips from the Rocky Canyon Quarry are already limited by previous land use permit approvals and will not increase the result of this project. And then it goes on to talk about the existence of the existing concrete batch plants, recycling centers, loads. I'm having an effect on the community and the Main Street interchange or the 46 West interchange, and therefore we pay some traffic mitigation fees to help lessen the impact of this project. Now, granted, this is a temporary project, so how do we solve all those problems?
Let me take a stab at it, and then maybe Richard can jump in as well. What the argument I tried to make was that this project would generate anywhere between 20 and 40 trips per day over a period of 6 to 12 months. Some of those trips are already heading to this location because it's trips that are carrying loads of concrete and asphalt that are already going to Volpe Isabel so that that concrete and asphalt can be recycled. So that reduces those 20 to 40 trips. The remaining trips, given the heavy volume of traffic that's on Volpe Isabel and Ramada already, the remaining trips don't constitute a significant impact to the transportation system in that area.
Well, neither does a single-family residence, doesn't by itself, okay? But we make them fess up some money because added with all the other little trips, it does.
So that's where the difference between this being permanent versus temporary comes in. And whenever we're constructing a new residence or a new business that's going to continue to operate into the future, we charge them the fee for their cumulative impact to the transportation system. But in this sense, it's kind of like an extended construction project. And the traffic is just being added during the length of the construction phase. Then something else will be able to occur on this site, and it will, its transportation impacts will be evaluated and the fees charged at that time.
Okay. There wasn't any concern that this traffic is going to back up Main Street or 46 West?
No.
No limitation on the hours that you should be taking?
No.
Okay.
And because I didn't say so, I'm Richard Marshall with Public Works.
Okay. I was wondering who you were.
Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? It's a public hearing. I'll open it up, starting with the applicant.
Good morning, Commissioner Roos and fellow commissioners. I am Bob Colbert with Union Asphalt. I'm here to answer any questions, if you have any. Other than that.
You heard the new Condition 9?
Pardon?
You heard the new Condition 9?
Yes, I did.
And you're agreeing with it?
Yeah, that's fine.
I guess no one's got any questions for you. Thank you. I don't have any speaker slips. Any of the public wanted to comment on this? I know the Templeton Area Advisory Group had no comment on it. So, seeing none, I'll close the public hearing, bring it back to the commission for further discussion, action.
I would move approval of the negative declaration and move approval of the use permit with the findings and with the added condition number 9 to Exhibit B.
I'll second that.
All right. Roll call.
Commissioner Rappa?
Aye.
Chairman Moskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes. All right. Thanks. Here's our first item. What's our next item, Madam Secretary?
Hearing to consider a request by Napomo Retail, LLC for Hearing to consider a request by Unical Corporation to amend their 1998 development plan, coastal development plan, D890558, to allow transport of up to 860,000 cubic yards of non-hazardous impact soil via truck from the Guadalupe oil field to the City of Santa Maria landfill. County file number D010320D, Supervisorial District 4, John Nall, Project Manager.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, I'm John Nall. I'm your Principal Environmental Specialist with the Department of Planning and Building. We're going to take a little bit different approach on this project this morning. As you're aware, the cleanup project out at the former Guadalupe oil field is an ongoing, complex project that over the course of its life will take years to complete. And because of that ongoing nature and, of course, the fact that staff resources are limited, what we've done on this project is the county has agreements with Unical whereby they fund the cost of outside consultants to do things like mitigation monitoring, condition referred to in the staff report as the Multi-Agency Coordination Committee, or the MAC. That's what MAC stands for. The MAC is made up of all the agencies that have either a special interest or permit jurisdiction over the cleanup of the site. These include Regional Water Quality, Army Corps, Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife, Coastal Commission, the Division of Oil and Gas, and, of course, neighboring Santa Barbara County is also a member of the MAC. The point here is that the MAC, the group of agencies that have the responsibility for permitting all of the components of this complex cleanup, endorse the staff recommendation that is before you today. They've met, they've talked about it. In fact, the MAC, when the project's up and running, the MAC meets regularly. We try to meet on a monthly basis, face-to-face, around a table, and discuss issues that are going on with the project. That said, I'll introduce the consultants and the presenters. Bill Henry is with the Morrow Group. Bill, maybe you want to raise your hand, show them who you are. Bill's with the Morrow Group, a local firm, and he is staff's daily point of contact on this project. I'm going to turn the presentation over to Bill in just a minute. John Pearson with MRS, next to Bill, is the EIR project manager and is responsible for the supplemental EIR that you've read. John's going to follow Bill with a discussion of the environmental issues associated with the project. Mr. Pearson was the preparer of the original 1998 EIR for the cleanup and has prepared, like I said, the supplemental EIR that's before you today. Mr. Pearson also coordinates the daily mitigation monitoring at the site and coordinates all of our MAC meetings. Also here today are Diane Kuchel and Sheila Soderberg with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Diane and Sheila are engineering geologists who are participants on the MAC and have been involved in the Regional Board's evaluation of the proposed project. Diane and Sheila will discuss the Regional Board's role in the proposed project as part of staff's presentation this morning. Last but not least, we have John Zhao with the City of Santa Maria. Mr. Zhao is the City's Solid Waste and Utilities Engineer and has been involved with the City's coordination and environmental review of their approved plan for closure of the landfill per Regional Board permits. And as you know, we're going to be talking about the material from Guadalupe going to the Santa Maria landfill this morning. Mr. Zhao will provide a brief discussion of the city's need for the proposed project. There are several key people that are not in attendance today. One of those is Melissa Boggs with Fish and Game, also Allison Detman with the Coastal Commission. These folks are also members of the MAC. Because of conflicts, they couldn't be here today. However, each has authorized your staff to speak on their behalf in support of the recommendation on the proposed project. With that, I'm going to turn it now over to our consultants. Bill?
Thank you, John. Mr. Chairman, members of the Planning Commission, Bill Henry, Morrow Group. Before getting into the details of the project description, It's important to review why an SEIR, or supplemental EIR, is before the Planning Commission today for certification and why UNICAL is seeking an amendment to their coastal development permit. The need for cleanup and restoration at the Guadalupe Field project site originates from the project site's production of oil and natural gas and the use of diluent to facilitate this production from 1946 to 1990. Diluent, a hydrocarbon blend which acted as a thinner in the oil extraction process, leaked throughout the site and contaminated soil and groundwater. Also leaked throughout the site, also crude oil was leaked throughout the site and mixed with sand, creating what's referred to as sump material, the other main source of contamination. In 1998, the county certified an EIR that evaluated the impacts of multiple cleanup, disposal, and restoration options throughout the 2,700-acre project site. Excavation of the contaminated soil and groundwater and treatment through use of a land treatment unit was selected as the preferred remediation approach. Also in 1998, the Regional Water Quality Control Board issued Cleanup and Abatement Order 98-38, mandating remediation actions. The Regional Board's Cleanup and Abatement Order was consistent with what was recommended in the 1998 EIR and permitted by the County of San Luis Obispo. Excavations at the project site began in 1999 at selected sites, and contaminated soil was stockpiled. Some of this soil was used for land treatment unit pilot studies, and permit applications were submitted to gain final approval for the land for use of a land treatment unit for treating excavated material. The land treatment unit permit applications raised numerous questions and concerns, or NHIS, as they'll be referred to today, from the project site to the Santa Maria landfill was not addressed in the 1998 EIR. The county and the MAC determined that preparation of a supplemental EIR to the 1998 EIR would be the appropriate form of environmental review. Therefore, what is before you today and is evaluated in the 2005 supplemental EIR consists solely of the transfer of NHIS material to the Santa Maria landfill and use of additional Q4 sand for backfill. All other actions, for example, continued excavations at the project site, have already been approved as part of the county's 1998 coastal development permit and the regional board's cleanup and abatement order. Again, today's request by UNICAL is to amend their 1998 coastal development permit to allow the transport of up to 860,000 cubic yards of non-hazardous hydrocarbon-impacted soil via truck from the Guadalupe Field to the City of Santa Maria landfill and to allow for an increase in use of 500,000 cubic yards of clean sand for backfill from the Q4 borrow site. The objective of the proposed project is to implement a disposal method that will result in the removal of NHIS from the environmentally sensitive areas of the Guadalupe Field and move it to a location where it can be contained and controlled. The Guadalupe Field project site consists of approximately 2,700 acres and is located in the southwestern corner of the county within the larger Napomo Dunes complex, shown here in red on this slide. A small segment of the southwest portion of the project site extends into Santa Barbara County near the mouth of the Santa Maria River. It's another slide showing the project location. And here's an aerial photograph with the project site bounded in orange with the Santa Maria River running along the southern portion of the project site and the mouth of the Santa Maria River. Here's a land use category map showing the project site. And the project site is bounded here by this thin black line that you can see. The City of Santa Maria landfill, the other key component to the proposed project, is located within the northeast portion of the City of Santa Maria and is adjacent to the Santa Maria River, approximately 16 miles east of the Guadalupe Field project site. The location map showing the site in green. It's an aerial photo of the Santa Maria landfill site bounded with the green border line, and you can see the Santa Maria River running along the eastern side here of the landfill. As stated above, the quantity of NHIS that would be transferred to the landfill is 860,000 cubic yards. In order to determine the appropriate quantity needing to be disposed of and evaluated in the supplemental EIR, the NHIS material was broken down into three categories. The first being Category A sump material, consisting of 200,000 cubic yards. The second being Category B, which is NHIS-affected materials that are currently stockpiled on the project site. And the third being Category C material, which are NHIS materials remaining to be excavated, consisting of 280,000 cubic yards. Approximately half of the NHIS to be disposed of at the Santa Maria landfill is currently stockpiled at two sites at the Guadalupe field. One is referred to as Tank Battery 8, or TB8, and the other is Tank Battery 9, or TB9. A large quantity of the remainder of non-hazardous hydrocarbon-impacted soil would be generated through future excavations. This is a site plan showing the project site, and bordered in orange here is the TB8 stockpile, and in pink here is the TB9 stockpile. This is a photograph of the TB8 stockpile, again located there in the orange. As stated earlier, with trucking of the NHIS material to the landfill, there will be a net loss of soil at the project site due to the previously approved excavations and a need for additional backfill material. As part of the 1998 EIR, removal of 500,000 cubic yards of clean sand from the Q4 dune for backfill was evaluated and permitted as part of UNICAL's coastal development permit. As part of the proposed project before you today, the applicant has identified the need for an additional 500,000 cubic yards of backfill material. It should be noted that approximately 200,000 cubic yards of clean sand has been utilized to date during the initial excavations that occurred in 1999. Again, here's a slide of the site plan, and the Q4 borrow site is 2001 by the Regional Board for their acceptance of non-hazardous hydrocarbon-impacted soils from various oil industry remediation sites throughout the region as part of their landfill closure program. NHIS acceptance at the landfill has been evaluated in a joint technical document, an EIR addendum, as well as a supplemental EIR. All of these documents were prepared for the City of Santa Maria landfill. The landfill has been accepting NHIS from oil industry sites in the region since 2003. In 2004, the Regional Board issued a letter to the landfill that specifically addressed and allowed for acceptance of NHIS from the Guadalupe field. The landfill needs this material as part of a closure program that would require a total of 5 million cubic yards of NHIS to achieve complete closure. The Guadalupe field NHIS that is proposed to be disposed of at the landfill represents approximately 20% of the total quantity required by the Santa Maria landfill for closure. To briefly summarize the closure program that's been approved by the Regional Board at the Santa Maria landfill, it's important to state that the landfill needs this quantity of material in order to achieve slopes or grades on top of the closed portions of the landfill. These grades would enable water to run off of the closed landfill cells as opposed to allowing it to collect on flat surfaces where ponding could lead to problems with leaching and eventual groundwater contamination. What is created as part of building these slopes are large mounded areas with surface water collection ditches around the perimeter that collect and treat all surface water runoff. This is a figure showing what the landfill would look like without adequate slope and the resulting ponding that would occur. As part of the landfill closure program, the NHIS from sites such as the Guadalupe field is just one component of an elaborate cap infrastructure that generally includes concrete perimeter drainage channels, geosynthetic clay liners, leachate collection pipes, and a low-density membrane. Within this system, the NHIS ultimately is entombed within an elaborate cap over the top of the landfill. This figure shows the landfill cap and cap infrastructure in place, concrete drainage channels around the perimeter, and the resulting 5% slope. This is a cross-section figure showing what a cap would look like while being constructed, and in the bright green, that represents the NHIS material. This shows the final cap in place with the bright green NHIS material entombed within the landfill, final landfill cell. This is a photograph from the top of a landfill cell that's currently being constructed. You can see right here freshly dumped NHIS material. This is material that's been temporarily covered, waiting for the final cap. And this is looking southward over the length of the landfill, over areas where additional and where the 5 million cubic yards of NHIS material is going to be needed in the future to complete the closure program. This is a photo looking at the point of the previous photograph showing the NHIS material and the resulting mound and the 5% slopes that create the elaborate cap over the landfill. The NHIS would be transported from the Guadalupe field to the Santa Maria landfill, a distance of 16 miles in one direction. There are three different routes proposed for transporting the NHIS. Which of these three are used would vary throughout the duration of the project and would depend on a number of factors such as weather, avoiding impacts to populated areas, or any other unique scenarios where incompatibility issues may arise. This figure shows the three transportation routes that were evaluated in the supplemental EIR and proposed by UNICAL. The first route is the division route, shown here in green. This is the entrance to the project site. With the division route, trucks would leave the site, travel along Thornberry, north on Highway 1, east on Division Street, south on Bonita School Road, south on Stinton Road, and then east on Bataravia, traveling much of the distance to the landfill. The second route is the Bataravia route, shown here in pink, leaving Thornberry Road, south on Highway 1, through the city of Guadalupe, east on Highway 166, south on Sima Street, where it connects and continues east on Bataravia Road. The third route is referred to as the Main Street route, shown here in orange. Again, east on Thornberry, south on Highway 1 through the city of Guadalupe, east on Highway 166, south on Black Road, where it connects again to Bataravia and continues much. It includes transporting the proper equipment to the project site and setting it up. This equipment would include haul trucks and trailers, water trucks, excavators, dozers, and front-end loaders. Widening of selected roads on the project site may need to be implemented to accommodate two-way traffic of large haul trucks. Road widening may be required on approximately 8,600 linear feet of roadways. Average road widening would consist of 5 feet on each side of the road and then repaving of the road. This is a photograph of a typical roadway on the project site that may need to be widened. As you can see, it's wide enough for one truck at this point in time. If UNICAL determines that it's necessary to have two-way traffic on roads such as these, then they'll exercise their potential ability to widen a road such as this. They're going to do what they can to avoid needing to do that. The operational aspects of the proposed project would include the following. Loading of the NHIS at the project site into 8 to 18 cubic yard capacity dump trucks using front-end loaders. Covering the truck with tarps, sweeping tires of NHIS, and weighing trucks. Then transporting the NHIS material to the Santa Maria landfill using one of the three previously described routes. Sampling of one truck and 20 would be implemented to ensure that NHIS acceptance criteria is being met. After sampling, the NHIS material would be offloaded at the landfill. Trucks would then return to the Guadalupe Field project site using the route that they came on and then be reloaded for another trip. This is a photograph of an 18 cubic yard haul truck dumping non-hazardous hydrocarbon impacted soil at the Santa Maria landfill. If the NHIS criteria are not met, UNICAL would be required to return and haul the material back to the project site, stockpile it to allow for additional natural attenuation, and then potentially haul it off to a landfill at a future date that accepts hazardous materials. It's expected that the amount of material from the Guadalupe field that does not meet the NHIS acceptance criteria would be approximately 200 cubic yards. Hauling of the 860,000 cubic yards of NHIS is expected to take 3 years. A range of 2 to 4 years was included in the project description of the supplemental EIR to account for scheduling changes. During peak short-term periods of activity, the busiest periods, 150 haul truck round trips per day are estimated. The project schedule over the 2 to 4 year period would be 50 weeks per year, 5 days per week, with work generally occurring during daylight hours. At this point, I'd like to turn the presentation to John Pearson.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Bill. Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, my name is John Pearson. I'm with MRS and was the project manager for preparation of the Supplemental Environmental Impact Report. I'm going to go through briefly some of the environmental issues that were identified for the project, the major impacts that were identified, and the proposed mitigation measures. The first thing is a notice of preparation and initial study were prepared for the project in February of 2004. That was issued for a 30-day public comment period. A scoping hearing was held on the notice of preparation in March of 2004. And from the initial study and the scoping hearing, there were basically four major issues that were identified for the project. One was concerns about air quality impacts associated with trucking. That had to do with the air emissions from the engines as well as fugitive dust issues. Traffic and road impacts were also an issue that was identified. There was also concerns about biological impacts associated with trucking, primarily associated with the road modifications. What Bill showed in the areas they want to widen the roads, there is the potential for removing some upland habitat, which was a concern. Also, a number of the haul routes within the Guadalupe site go in close proximity to wetlands that have red-legged frogs, which were a threatened species under the federal act, and there was concern about impacts to those red-legged frogs as they crossed the road during their migration season. And then there was issues raised about public safety impacts, just the increased traffic and potential for traffic accidents associated with the increased traffic. The based on the initial study and the comments received on the NOP and the scoping hearing, the list of issue areas shown on the slide were evaluated in detail in the EIR. In essence, this was, I guess you could view it as a focused EIR. We did not look at all issue areas, but these were the ones that were identified as potentially having significant impacts. As a result of the analysis, what we found is that there was the potential for, as they migrate across the road, for these trucks to impact red-legged frogs. And the areas of concern were at the entrance road. There were two wetland areas at the entrance road that would be part of the haul route. And then within the facility near the haul route, there's an M12 and L11 wetland, which also are known to have red-legged frogs. Air quality issues here, again, were not surprising. Air emissions from the engines of the trucks and fugitive trucks, fugitive dust. One thing I would like to state is, in terms of the EIR, this is just for the record, that in the area we talked about health risk assessment, it was not found to be a significant impact from the trucks, but there is an inconsistency in the document on table 5511, which is page 514. The numbers for the health risk assessment for Bonita School are correct. However, on page 513, last paragraph in the text, it states 1.04 in a million, and it should have been 1.06, which is what's consistent with the table. So I just wanted to put that on the record. With regard to transportation circulation, what we found is that the only area where there were significant traffic impacts was at Bedarabia Road at the intersection of Broadway and Bedarabia Road in the intersection of Miller during peak afternoon hours. With the maximum number of trucks, we looked at peak trucks of 150 a day. There would be what would be viewed as a significant impact in terms of circulation at those two intersections in the afternoon hours, peak travel afternoon hours. agricultural resources. The project's going to require construction of a staging area on Thornberry Road, which will take about 0.6 acres of agricultural land out of production for the period that the transportation is occurring. This will be a temporary disturbance or a loss of agricultural land that will be returned to agricultural land once the trucking is done in the 2 to 4 year time frame. The other issue is Thornberry Road, if people have been out there, it's primarily used for agricultural vehicles. There's not much else out there. And truck traffic on Thornberry Road around the area of the staging area could impact the movement of agricultural equipment and crops. And those are viewed as both being significant impacts. And in regard to public safety, the increased truck traffic will lead to potential increases in accidents. Based on Caltrans accident rates, the project would be expected to result in a fatality accident of one chance in 2,000 per year, which was viewed as being a significant level. The transportation that we're talking about will result in about 860,000 truck miles per year. So it's a fair number of truck miles per year in terms of transporting this material. One thing I would say is that we were able to develop mitigation measures for all of these impacts, and all of these impacts were found to be mitigable to a level of insignificant Class 2. The project did not result in any identified Class 1 impacts. Some of the key mitigation measures that were identified is, in terms of safety, to use licensed professional drivers and for UNICAL to conduct a safety review process for the contractors that will be hauling the NHIS. This will reduce the likelihood of a fatality accident to less than one chance in 10,000, which was viewed to be insignificant. Safety reviews would include a review of the accident history of the carriers, the requirement that the carrier have a drug and alcohol program in place, and a review of their motor carrier safety ratings. We also required as a mitigation that they develop and implement an NHIS spill plan. In case of spill of NHIS from a truck, that they have a plan in place to collect that and contain any of that and to basically pick that material up, clean up the area it spilled. The other one was to revise their sensitive species management plan. This is a document that they already are required, UNICAL is already required to have. And the revisions will mainly be to address the issue of red-legged frogs in the vicinity of the wetlands along the haul route, and primarily it is to have surveys conducted of the road during the breeding season and rainy season when these frogs are migrating, and to set a 15-mile-an-hour speed limit along those portions of the road in the vicinity of the wetlands. The surveys would be conducted at least 4 times per day when the roads were wet. The next one was to update their traffic control plan, and this would include the portion regarding road maintenance requirements. UNICAL was required as part of their original permit to do a traffic control plan. The traffic control plan details specific commuter and truck trip vehicle routes, peak hour and route restrictions, any road surface maintenance, and traffic safety requirements. I'll discuss this a little later. Limit the amount of heavy equipment operating at any one time at the site. Limiting equipment operations during high pollutant level days. Requiring that all off-road equipment use CARB-certified diesel fuel. Use electric equipment to the extent feasible. Maintain all equipment tuned to manufacturer specifications. And use direct injection diesel engines. With regard to some of the agricultural impacts, the main mitigation was the requirement to maintain a driveway through the staging area for farm equipment to access the fields and to allow equipment in and crops out. Go to the next one. Some of the ones I was going to talk about in a little more detail is the fugitive dust from trucks. As I mentioned, they would have to update their fugitive dust plans. The program right now is to implement what is called a dry decontamination process for the trucks. Basically, once the trucks are loaded, they are broomed to remove any material, and then they pass over what's called a rumble mat, which is a thing that shakes the tires to remove any material from the tires. trucks hauling NHL will be lined with plastic and will be sealed with a tarp that is sealed around the truck edges and then strapped in place or placed over the tarp for added protection. This is a picture of a sealed truck moving non-hazardous impacted soil. This is actually from Avila Beach. The method that's being proposed here is the same method that was used at Avila Beach for hauling that material. At Avila Beach, there were approximately 42,000 truck trips to move various materials in and out of the site. The Avila Beach trucks traveled about 3 million miles, and there were no complaints about dust or leaking contaminated material from those trucks. The only issues were the county's environmental monitors a number of times found trucks that were not leaving covered, and they had to come back and be covered. But these are sealed around all four edges, and then as additional protection, straps are placed on top. Trucks leaving the Guadalupe site will be inspected by the county monitors, and provisions are in place to go to a wet decontamination system if dry decontamination system is not effective. The county monitors will also follow a number of trucks to the landfill to determine if the tarp containment system is working. A system is in place to require the use of water or other binders to the top of the NHIS on the trucks if fugitive dust emissions are an issue. Based upon the Avila experience, the proposed mitigation of dry decontamination is expected to be sufficient to eliminate the fugitive dust issues associated with trucks. Next one I was going to talk about is damage to road and road repair. In looking at the various roads that will be used, project truck traffic will represent 2 to 15% of total traffic on the roads. Now, what we did in coming up with those numbers is we assumed that it was 150 truck trips a day for every day, which is not going to be. That's only the peak day, and we assumed that all trucks stayed on one route and didn't use the various routes. And it was making those very conservative assumptions. The traffic was at most 15% of total traffic on the roads. The traffic control plan, that's one thing that UNICAL will be required to update. It's an existing plan that they have, will include a component that addresses road surface maintenance and how damage to roads will be assessed and what steps will be taken to conduct repairs. This plan must be submitted to the San Luis Obispo County Engineering Department for approval, and the condition requires that San Luis Obispo County Engineering Department do that in consultation with Santa Barbara County Public Works. Next one I was going to talk about is a little bit about the NHIS manifest and tracking system. DOT requires that UNICAL use a bill of lading for transportation of the NHIS. However, UNICAL will be going to a more rigorous system for tracking. They will be using a manifest system for tracking and disposal of the NHIS, which is more stringent than the DOT requirements. You can go to the next one for a minute. This is just a sample of the UNICAL manifest tracking system. The City of Santa Maria also requires that the landfill use a manifest system for all material accepted as part of their NHIS program. This was required by the city so that, one, they know the origin of all the material, and, two, they have information regarding the material if the truck hauling is involved in an accident or has a spill. We have proposed a new condition be added that to the project that requires the use of a manifest system for tracking and transportation delivery of the NHIS. Some of the key elements of the manifest system would include the license plate or other identification number of the truck, the load number, the date and start and completion time of the hauling, and a copy of the weight ticket from the Santa Maria landfill, which will document the time of arrival at the landfill and the weight of material left at the landfill. And since the loads will also be weighed at Guadalupe, you'll be feasible. We dropped it from further consideration. We then conducted a screening analysis on various issue areas to look at, did it offer some environmental advantages over the proposed project? If it did, then it was evaluated in the SER in detail. If it did not, it was dropped from further consideration. The four alternatives that we looked at was off-site trucking to another destination. These would be things like McKittrick, Kettleman Hills, or Buttonwillow. This is where the material would not be taken and used as cover, but would be taken and disposed of. These facilities range in distance from 117 to 140 miles one way. These are the areas that the Avila Beach material was taken to. really all the operations associated with this alternative would be similar to those for the proposed project. It would just be longer trucking and longer hauling. We looked at a treated material landfill, or land feature as it's called, and the treated material land feature would be an alternative that would involve the construction of a new dune structure at the Guadalupe site with treated material. Basically, you would treat the material in a land treatment unit, and then you would take all the material and build a new dune-like structure at the site and then revegetate that. The treated material landfill would have been located, would be located at Tank Battery 9. It would be designed with liners and leachate collection system. It could only accommodate about 600,000 cubic yards of the NHIS because the 200,000 cubic yards of sump material could not be fully treated using a land treatment unit, and that would still have to be disposed of by hauling it off-site. The other one that we looked at was an engineering containment unit. More simple terms, a landfill, and this would be to construct a dune structure of untreated material at the site, and this would involve, again, putting down a leachate collection system, a liner, and then once the structure was completed, to then cap that with some sort of cap, like a clay cap, and then seal that, and then cover that with clean material and try to revegetate it. There was concerns that it probably could not be properly revegetated given the layer of clean material on top and the clay cap. In this case, we could use the entire 860,000 cubic yards of non-hazardous material. However, it would involve delivery of a fair amount of clean material to the site for the cap, as well as delivery of the clay for the clay for the cap, and then the clean material for the cover. The last one we looked at was slurry injection. This is basically, would take all of the NHIS material and slurry it with water and inject it back into the underground oil reservoir beneath the project site. This would use a large amount of water, a large amount of energy. You could dispose of the entire 8,600 cubic yards of material using this way. One of the issues that faces this technology is, as the law currently stands, EPA would not allow this material to be reinjected because it's not considered part of the current activities associated with the oil and gas operations and exploration. That could change in the future, but right now EPA would not allow this material to be slurry injected. In terms of environmentally superior alternative, upon comparison of the proposed project to the above four alternatives, the SCR found that the proposed project would be considered environmentally superior project. The proposed project would not result in any significant impacts that cannot be fully mitigated to insignificant levels. Most of the other alternatives would reduce the severity of impacts associated with short-term trucking operations. However, these impacts would still occur since the Santa Maria landfill would still need the NHIS material from other sources. There would also still be some trucking impacts associated with the treated material land feature and the engineering containment unit because you're going to need to bring material into the site. Also, each of the above alternatives result in a range of either long-term Class 1 or Class 2 impacts to resource areas such as water quality, biological resources, public safety, or land use. The last thing I was going to touch on is agency coordination and support. As John Nall mentioned, there has been a multi-agency coordination committee, or MAC, that has been in place that coordinates all activities between the various federal, state, and local agencies. This has been in place for coming on now about 10 years. The project is very complex and has 24 major permits and directives from 12 various federal, state, and local agencies. And if you add all the permit conditions up from those permits and directives, there's approximately 1,200 permit conditions on the Guadalupe project. And some of these are similar from various agencies, so there really is a strong need to coordinate. The slide lists the major members of the MAC. The MAC was the main group, really, that working with UNICAL, I should say UNICAL is part of the MAC, the MAC has been actively involved in the development of the scope of the SCIR and has been actively involved throughout the SCIR process. it's really a great process, and that, you know, it's one of the few projects that I work on where all the agencies kind of work together and resolve issues as a group, as opposed to one-on-one. Works very well. That ends my presentation.
We're just about done. Regional board staff has a couple of comments to make.
Okay.
Diane or Sheila.
Good morning, Commissioners, Mr. Chair. My name is Diane Kukul, again, with the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and I just wanted to mention to you that that we do support this project. We feel that it is the best way to continue doing work that is specified in our cleanup or abatement order that was issued to UNICAL in 1998, in which specific areas of the site were designated as requiring excavation to improve the water quality, both groundwater and surface water quality out there. And in addition, I just wanted to convey also that our office has been involved in dealing with both the Santa Maria landfill since the mid-1980s, and then with the cleanup at Guadalupe since the mid-1990s. So we've been very instrumental in knowing how this project has gotten to the stage that it is right now, in approving the acceptance criteria for allowing soil that has petroleum in it to be accepted at the Santa Maria landfill. And there have been a lot of dialogues that have gone back and forth between the city, UNICAL, and the county, San Luis Obispo County, and our office associated with the numbers that we find to be acceptable and protective of both soil and groundwater. So, just generally speaking, we support the project.
Thank you. Thank you. Would the other member of your team to speak?
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, last but not least, Mr. Zhao with the City of Santa Maria. John?
Good morning, Chairman Ross and Commissioners. I have with me Paul Karp, Public Works Director from the City of Santa Maria. Paul will make a brief statement why the City of Santa Maria is in supportive of this proposed project. And with that, with your permission, I would like to turn the podium to Paul. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Commissioners, we begin by thanking you and your staff for working with us on this particular project. The staff and the consultants were instrumental in working with UNICAL to modify the haul route so that we don't end up with this traffic through the more busier parts of the city on 166. So we thank you for that. We do need the soil. We've provided you a letter from our mayor dated today supporting the project. I'm not going to go into any details. The staff has very well pronounced all those for you, and I'm here for questions if there are any.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes staff's presentation, and we're all available for questions.
And then I assume we're going to have any, but it's time for our morning break, so let's take a 14-minute break and bring us back here at 10:20.